abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. I am a real African, a real African. I am a real African, a real African. I am a real.
Hi, how you doing? Nice to do another one of these. I think I'm gonna put a bit of reverb on this one because Bill Burr put some on his and it sounds nice. So you'll be hearing reverb on this one, I reckon. Or you might not. You know, I'll decide later. But yeah, I'm in the studio. I think it's just turned 7 a.m. I haven't gone to sleep in quite a while. And I thought I should do one of these because it's nearly been a month and I was supposed to do one every 2 weeks. But I've been planning guests and one of them couldn't make it 2 weeks ago, so hopefully they can come in for the next one. So I'll just do one in between with just me so I can talk about some stuff, give some updates, and talk about some things. Yeah, so alright, since I've done my last one, Olympics has happened. This is awful so far. What am I doing? Alright, football's back. Let's just talk about that first. Alright, football is back. And it's just a great feeling. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I checked the fantasy.premierleague.com website and fantasy was back up. And it was such a happy moment in my life. Just looking at that blank screen with those 11, 12, 13, 14, those 14 empty spaces for me to pick. It was just, oh, it's indescribable, the feeling of just football is back, you know? And so fantasy is back and the Premier League is back. And Robin Van Persie signed for Manchester United. Spoiler alert. If you didn't know that, If you didn't know that and you follow football, come on. So he plays for Man United now, which is really weird. Sorry for any Arsenal fans for bringing it up. Just last night I was with my friend Ray and he couldn't even deal with anyone mentioning him. I've got a weird relationship with Arsenal fans because obviously, I grew up in Camden, so I should really be supporting Arsenal if I support my local team, but I wasn't born in this country, so I picked whatever team I liked. And United was kind of my family team because in Saudi Arabia, I had an uncle that supported United, and it just kind of got passed down to me through him. My dad is into football the same, not, you know, he passively follows football, he watches matches of the day, he doesn't really have a team. But yeah, so I've been, you know, picked on by Arsenal fans throughout my whole life. So whenever any opportunity comes to take the piss out of Arsenal fans or Arsenal, I usually take it, but I'm quite a respectful fan. If I'm with you and your team loses, I'm not gonna rub it in your face because I know the hurt of, you know, a loss, really. Because what football is, what football fandom is, in terms of the emotional roller coaster, is you're literally just putting, like, the more you are into it, the more articles you read on your team, or, you know, pre-match previews on who's fit and who's not and what the tactics are going to be like, and the amount that you are completely engaged within it, you're putting more of your emotional chips on the table, so to speak, and you're just gambling with it. So if your team wins, you're going to be on top of the world if you put a lot of emotional worth on football and your team. And if they lose, you know, that's your day finished, really. We lost to Everton on Monday. I went to the Green Man in the West End with Ed from United Ramp was supposed to be there, but he couldn't make it. So I was there with Doran Salomon, Musa Okonga, and At Jay in Essex. And we had a good time, watched the match. You know, had some good hashtag top bants in capitals. And we lost. And, you know, it wasn't too bad. I didn't feel that bad about it because we don't really have a defence at the moment, but... Yeah, things are going to get better. Rooney wasn't fit. Ugh, it was terrible. Anderson had the wrong name on the back of his shirt. He literally had the wrong name on the back of his shirt. It said Anderson. which, you know, I think Albert's got to, you know, do something about that, to be honest. He can't be making those kind of mistakes. Albert Morgan's the kit man at United. That's the kind of level that I know, to be honest. It's not that I'm special, or, you know, I'm one of the two people that know that he exists, but more like, you know, when people, you know, oh, what team do you support? United. Man United, yeah. We live in London, yeah. How many times, have you even seen Old Trafford, let alone been in it? Yeah, I go to Old Trafford quite a few times a year, and I go to some away matches, and I go to youth matches and reserve matches. And I go to quite a lot, most of them when they're in London. Oh, all right. Do you know any chants? Yeah, I know probably all the chants, really. Other than, I'm still learning chants, but I know, I personally have a songbook of at least 50. Man United have lots of chants, generally about the team. We have sometimes 3 for each player. And we have more chants about our rivals than our rivals have about their rival, about themselves. So I know quite a lot of the chants, my friend. Oh, all right, let you run. And that's it, you know. They can't really say much to me, to be honest. I'm a real devoted fan, and which you should know if you've been listening to these, to be honest. But one of the things I wanted to say was, following on from the podcast before the last one, before the one with Musa, I talked a little bit about the media showing footballers out to be oafs and just imbeciles and just, you know, making them out to be idiots and people, you know, just bad, really, just showing them to be bad, in terms of them not being eloquent or not being educated or whatever. And, you know, I spoke about how it's a complete... You know, it's the middle-class media coming out against working-class people all the time. And this was accentuated by their coverage of the Olympics, which happened in London. I went to the Olympics. I'll tell you about it in a minute. Because every Olympian was seen to be... Oh, look how brave they are. You know, they're such honourable people, the peak of sportsmanship and all this other stuff. And at the same time, you're seeing people cheat in the badminton. But the badminton, like, basically, it changed the rules so that if you lost, if you made yourself lose in a certain round, it would make the next round easier for you. So you had two teams of badminton doubles literally just hitting it against the net on their serves. And people in the audience in London, very polite people, were booing. That's all they were doing. If all the hassle happened for the Olympics to happen in London, all the trouble we all have to go to host it in terms of logistically, you know, all the travel being messed up in London, all that kind of stuff, and you pay upwards, you know, up to about 70 quid for badminton tickets, and these people are gonna just hit it against the thing. Do you think I'm gonna boo? I'm going down there, I'm grabbing one of them flipping badminton rackets, and I'm hitting them around the head with it until they're just bleeding on the ground and just saying, don't disrespect my money, please. Don't disrespect the hard work. Like, I take time off work for this. Do you know what I mean? These people are just booing. That's not nice. Do more. Come on. Polite people in this country. It's not nice. You know, British culture is very weird. It's polite and then it's not polite. But anyway, so you have that. You have, you know, every other Olympian is on, you know, has taken steroids or something. How many people were in the Olympics that have been banned previously? Not just the sprinters, but in terms of every other event, you know? Flipping guys wearing glasses, trying to shoot stuff. That's not really nice, to be honest. How are you going to wear glasses? They're wearing magnifying glasses while they're trying to shoot stuff. And it's, you know, like clay pigeon shooting. Isn't that cheating? Anyway, and you know, I forgot the exact statistic, but it was something like only 35 of Britain's, I don't know how many, maybe there were a couple hundred, maybe 400 or something, Olympians, only 35 of them were state school educated. And you got to think, 17 of them were in a football team, and nearly all football players were working class. So most of these people are middle class, upper class, and the same class as the media, so most of the media writers that are going on about how bad footballers are, and then praising these flipping, these rich bastards, you know, on a horse. How rich do you have to be in a horse? You've got a horse. You're on a horse. Like, how is horse dancing? Dressage, by the way. How is horse dancing an event? That's just, oh, look, I've had money since I was born and I was able to have a horse. Let me show you what I can do with my horse. That's not cool. And, yeah, so the whole cut, and then as soon as the Olympics was over and the football started back up again, you had all these articles going on about, oh, the football's back. Let's get back to hearing swearing on the terraces around children and chants about other players and the other fans being stupid and, you know, having these footballers punch each other and dive and show no sportsmanship and all this crap. Well, let's be serious. It's football. Do you know the reason why no one swears at the Olympics? Because no one cares about the Olympics. No one has chants about the Olympics. No one writes a whole songbook about every athlete and talk, you know. You don't have that. No one cares about the Olympics. If someone ran, oh yeah, go. There's no special pre-prepared flipping set of lyrics where you have to sing to the guy. That's not what we do. It's the Olympics. No one cares. It happens four times a year and we still don't care about it. I mean, every 4 years and we still don't care about it. That was stupid. Like, there's passion involved in football, isn't it? There's a certain amount of tribalism that I appreciate in terms of rivalry. I think without rivalry, football would be so dead, but it gets too far, obviously, with Hillsborough chants and chants about Munich and that kind of stuff. And Leeds fans in, I think it was Istanbul or whatever. Not whatever. You know, don't want to disrespect that. Whatever is in, I don't know what city it was. I hope it's Istanbul. I think it's Istanbul. It was Istanbul. That kind of stuff is completely unsavoury and uncalled for. In my opinion, some people think it brings more spice to it. I think there's enough spice when you're just chatting about your players being crap and Chelsea having no history, being founded in 2003 and that kind of stuff, to be honest. And and going up to Arsenal fans going, where's your captain gone? Where's your captain gone? Don't you wish your striker was RVP? Sorry, Arsenal fans. Yeah. You know, that's good enough. And, you know, there's passion involved in football because people love it. Who loves... If you don't do gymnastics, who cares about gymnastics? No one's getting up going, yeah, come on, you effing... No one's doing that. So the reason why, you know, anyone does any of that kind of stuff is because, in terms of the fans' perspective, it's because people care about it. Where no one gives a damn about the Olympics, really. If you look at it properly, if you just think about it, Olympics gets more passive people. People that don't like football are watching the Olympics, but they're not watching it passionately. They're just watching it because they want to get involved in watching some sort of sport because they hate football and want the. And once every 4 years, they can, you know, can watch something and bear it because they don't like football. I don't understand those people. One of my best friends hates football and I just don't understand it. And whenever anyone mentions football, he just has this look on his face. And sometimes I'm on the bus and I start a conversation with strangers, quite often. Nearly, if I'm walking down the street, I'll probably start, you know, if it's a couple hundred metres, I'm starting at least four conversations with strangers. So if I'm on the bus and my mate who hates football, someone's talking about football on the bus, I just get involved and he's just like, all right, thanks for leaving me. But, yeah, and in terms of the cheating in football, players diving, obviously I hate diving from the bottom of my heart. But really? Olympians? Olympians don't cheat? You're telling me flipping... Anyone in weightlifting, no one in weightlifting has ever done drugs or in sprinting or in a high jump or whatever. Come on, bruv. Let's be serious, innit? You just hate working class people because you're a posh prick, innit? So, that's that. I went to see at the Olympics. I wasn't hating on Olympics. During the opening ceremony, I went crazy on Twitter. I said some things from like that, you know, I got really angry while watching it. Watching all the British nationalism is dangerous and it shouldn't be allowed, to be honest. Nationalism in itself, really, I don't appreciate. I think it's a very inflammatory thing it's always going to be exclusive. I've done politics A-level and obviously nationalism is... To define nationalism is subjective. It's in the eyes of the beholder, so to speak. So I can decide I'm my own nation, and decide my own set of cultural or nationalistic ideals or ways of life or cultural things or set of beliefs. And that's what it is to be nationalism. To be, you know, and for two examples of nationalist parties, political parties in Britain, you have the British National Party, who are an exclusive group, which means that they don't accept everyone. And then in Scotland, you have the SNP, the Scottish National Party, who, even though they have a very similar name, they're completely different. They're very inclusive, and they include anyone that identifies with being Scottish. That's beautiful. But just in general, nationalism to me is a very touchy subject, and it leads to flipping people like doing ethnic cleansing in it, to be honest. And in terms of Britain, nationalism and that Union flag is the most disgusting thing to me. It's worse than a swastika, you know, because it represents over, you know, nearly how many years? 500 years of imperialism, colonialism, and waving that flag around while enslaving people in their own countries and taking them out and taking them to other countries and selling them, and then putting them on boats and throwing them overboard, throwing thousands of them overboard and claiming insurance from Lloyd's of London, and flipping taking natural resources from every continent on the planet, from South America to Asia to Africa to Australasia, to the point where we don't even refer to these blocks of land as what they're supposed to be called. We call them, first we call them Indians in America, and then we call them Red Indians, and then we say, oh, sorry, no, it's politically correct as Native American. They're not even, the word America is brought by you. How can you call them Native Americans? They're just indigenous people of that block of land, right? And, you know, that Union flag, the Union Jack that Britain has, to me, it's worse than a swastika because way more hundreds of millions. Obviously, I'm not saying, you know, Nazis were good or, you know, but I'm saying in comparison over the amount of time the British Empire has lasted, to me, it hurts more. Because, you know, so during the Jubilee, I was someone that probably would have punched people in the head if I went out. I just stayed at home, didn't do any of that crap, didn't even... turn the TV off, disconnected the internet, and just watched some movies during the Jubilee crap. And then during the opening ceremony, he was like, "Please stand for our brave soldiers in of the Army, the Royal Air Force, and the Navy." And I'm like, no, because those people kill people, innit? And obviously the Army is a touch subject, and for me it's a very complex thing, because you have these working class people, mostly, who actually do the actual fighting. The middle class people kind of go to commander or whatever ranks quite easily, quite quickly. But most of them are poor people that, you know, that in their eyes they're serving their country, and they can't afford, you know, they don't have qualifications or that kind of crap. You know, they come to school, when everyone's doing the careers advice, the army come round with their little stool and say, "Join the army," all that kind of crap. You know, you're not going to do anything else. Would you want to be a plumber? Join the army. You know, no tax on your wages, and we pay for everything while you're out, all that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, that seems good, because I've got no other ambition in life. Let me go over. And then I see that they're working class people, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, they're going around killing people and raping them. The UN Peace Corps rape people quite often, but and then now we're seeing, I've been telling people for years, the British Army do it, and now this story in Kenya is coming up when they got raped and murdered this prostitute in Kenya. That's the British Army for you, you get me? So I'm not on the stand. Firstly, I don't stand for anyone. Whenever I'm in court, not for my things, by the way, but whenever I'm in court, you know, supporting my friends, or when I went to court, when I was in school, when I wanted to study, when I studied AS law and then I dropped it, I did a stand. "Please stand for Lord." Firstly, your name isn't Lord. There's one, I believe in God, so there's one Lord. So shut your mouth, you're not Lord. "Please stand for this prick." Why should I stand for this guy? He's no more of a man than me. You have more qualifications, yes, but you're not more honourable than me. You're not the honourable. You know what I mean? Respect the law, yeah, I respect the law to some extent, but if you want me to stand for you, I've never met you before, I don't know what you believe in. Maybe it sounds stupid if you're listening to this, but I don't roll with that. I don't roll with one man is better than the other, first among equals, or that kind of bullcrap. We're all equal, innit? So don't tell me you're better than me by me having to stand up. If I walked to the room, would you stand up? No. Why? Because I didn't get your qualifications. I don't believe in that. I'm probably smarter than you. So that's the end of it. So I don't do any of that kind of crap. I don't deal with that. So yeah, so the Olympics, the Queen came out of the little thing with James Bond, her top slave, going around just killing people all around the world, stopping communism because it's evil. I got really angry, so I just locked off that. But then, but the next day, when sports started, I woke up at like 9 a.m. and I saw judo, and I fell in love with some of the sports. Some things are not sports, by the way. Like, the criteria for me for sport is you have to have someone defending. Patrice O'Neill has talked about this, by the way, but you know, it's very similar to what I thought before. Whereas someone has to be defending. You can't have running, sprinting. The 100-meter sprint isn't a sport. That's a skill that can be used in certain sports like football and rugby and American football and basketball. It's not a sport. If you're just timing yourself to get someone else. Sport for me is there's someone else involved stopping you. Chess is a sport if the second criteria wasn't there, which is it has to be cardiovascular. Golf isn't a sport. Golf isn't a sport on the first criteria, by the way, because you're not opposing anyone. You're just setting a time or you're setting a score and then someone else trying to beat that score. No one's stopping you at that time. In football, while you're trying to score, someone is on the pitch stopping you. It's not you score and then you leave the pitch and then they try and score in a quicker time. So, but yeah, I fell in love with judo straight away. I was proper into it. I was just watching it going, judo, judo. Oh, he done a judo. Oh, that's sick. Because I done 6 months of judo in GCSEs. When I done GCSE PE, I realised I just distorted the speakers, by the way. I'm really sorry. I'll try and push the mic back a little bit. I done GCSE judo, so I kind of knew a few of the moves. I was pretty good at it for the 6 months, didn't it? I done a few martial arts in my life, all that kind of stuff. So I was like, yeah, try and get Ippon. Ippon! 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 That's an Ippon. I know that's an Ippon. That's an Ippon. That was sick. That's an Ippon. And I had a smile on my face. So I just went and bought some tickets for the football. And I saw Mexico vs Japan in the men's semi-final at Wembley. And I went with Loudmouth Melvin, who's a rapper, and I went with Chris Mentalist, who's a rapper, and I went with At Hip Hop Classroom, I believe, which is, he doesn't really want people to say his name, he wants to be very anonymous, but a very intelligent teacher. He actually works as a teacher who's very into hip hop. So, and I've known him for maybe about 2 years now. So I went to the match, and it was good. What if anything of note, Oate? Not really. I haven't been to Wembley. I went to the new Wembley. I haven't been there before. I haven't been to the old one either. So, first time going to Wembley. On the train, I was just singing Wembley, Wembley. I'm the famous Oate, and I'm going to Wembley. And next to me, there was a couple who were getting kind of pissed off with me because I was filming quite a lot of the match on my phone, and I was using my finger as like a live tactics thing, going, he should make that run, like using my finger as like one of the graphics arrows they have, and I was commentating the whole match. I don't know the players, so I was like, number 9, outside of the boot to number 4, oh, he puts the ball in. Oh, you shouldn't have done that, Jeff. What do you think? Yeah, I was doing the co-commentator as well, and they were getting quite pissed off. So that was funny. Match ended, I think, 3-1 to Mexico. Japan scored first with a banger. The first touch was so nice. And I think it was outside of the box. Really good shot. And then, obviously, Mexico came back 3 goals. It took a while, though, and the atmosphere was dead, to be honest. I don't know if it was the Olympics thing or Wembley, because whenever I've watched matches, England matches at Wembley, it just seems dead. Other than that stupid England band, no one's really doing anything, except every 5 minutes they sing the national anthem, God Save the Flipping Queen. Ugh, it's just disgusting. And they clap themselves afterwards. God Save the Queen. And they just clap themselves. They clap the fact that they've just sung that. Because they probably weren't aware that they could sing before, or they could remember words. I hate England fans. I hate England football team. I hate England. I just hate them. Yeah. Oh, as a black person, it's hard for me to like, you know, a culture that's hated my people for a long time. And, you know, I'm not saying you do or your generation do, but the previous couple hundred years, I've just tried to kill my people and the fact that I've come out of a place where I wasn't even born in my country because I wasn't allowed to, and I'm never going to be able to go to my country again until the dictator leaves, because he personally hates my father because they used to be friends, and he went a different way and became a dictator. So all of it, for me, all of the base of it is to do with Western imperialism and the fact that they split up all these countries and then tried to put them back together again differently. You know, like Styler put it the best for me, when he said they walked into a home, put up a wall, told one side you're better, and took the wall back down and went, all right, let's see what happens now, this is going to be fun. So yeah, that's how I feel about that kind of crap. So the atmosphere in Wembley was, it was dead unless Mexico done anything. If Mexico done a pass, these Mexicans went nuts. It was just like, oh, Mexico. And then all the dumb fans, because a lot of people, I think maybe there were a couple thousand Mexican fans, maybe close to 15,000, and then only a couple Japanese fans. The attendance was 80,000 something, so maybe there were like less than 5,000 Japanese fans, and the rest were like punters from England or in England going to the match. Actually, in front of me there was two American families. And they just kept saying the dumbest stuff. Like, what, the kid turned around to his mum and was like, "Mummy, who's this?" Pointing at his food, and his mum said, "That's Mr. Pringle." My mum wouldn't know that. Even though I'm not the healthiest person, if you look at me, my mum doesn't know that it's Mr. Pringle. I was always given fresh food. It's Mr. Pringle. Who knows that? I don't know that's Mr. Pringle. And I'm 21. I'm down with, you know, popular culture. But that made me laugh so much. And then, yeah, if Mexico done anything, people went nuts. And the English, the stadium kept doing Mexican waves. I don't know if it was a football thing, but if you're in a football stadium, and it was, you know, there was a lot of families, because I think the Olympics, they knew that no one would get up and swear because no one cares about the Olympics. So they had, you know, a lot of families there doing all the Mexican waves. And at one point, there were two Mexican waves at the same time going in opposite directions, which meant they clashed quite often, and I was just not getting involved. I was trying to watch the football, to be honest. I paid £45 for my ticket. I'm in the clouds, basically, at Wembley, and I'm just trying to concentrate on the match, so I don't care about your stupid Mexican wave. I'm trying to watch the match. Sit down. Stop pissing me off. But yeah, and then on the way back, the police kept with us, which was great. As you know, I love the police. Those honourable men protecting us from things. By the way, someone told me that Metropolitan Police were first set up to protect rich people. Obviously, that's what they do now, but yeah, I should really do some research into that. But the Premier League is back, ladies and gentlemen, and fantasy football. Let me tell you about my fantasy football team, right? Today is Wednesday. No, what day is today? It's Thursday. It's just become Thursday. It is 8:03 Thursday morning. And Chelsea last night played Reading, which meant that it's the last match of the game week. And the fantasy is over for a week. Oyster. Alright, my phone's doing something. Words with friends. Oh my god. I'm terrible at words with friends. Stop. Alright, go away. And I'm top of my league, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm top of Creme de la Prem, which is another league I have. I'm in with some other mates. But my personal league, with all of my friends and my Twitter followers and Facebook friends that I've told to jump in, it's called Los Vigilantes de la Nigeria, which is Spanish for Power Rangers, because that was my favourite show when I was younger. I'm top of the league. There are a couple, over 50 people in the league, and I'm top. And I was talking the big talk, and I can walk the big walk, ladies and gentlemen. I can walk that walk. That walk of pride, that walk of confidence, and that walk of someone who knows that he's going to win the fantasy league. It's just week one, and I know that I'm going to win it. I signed Michu, Swansea's number 9. Who they signed from Rayo Vallecano. I hope I pronounced that right. Who scored 15 goals in the Liga last season from midfield, the highest scoring midfielder in the Liga last season, including everyone else. Iniesta, Santi Cazorla, which is how you're supposed to pronounce it. Commentators, it's not Cazorla, I think. Every time I've heard Sid Lowe say it, it says Cazorla, so I'm going to say Cazorla from now on. All of them, he scored more goals than everyone. So I knew to get him, got him. Bam, scored 2 goals in his debut. I got Pogrebniak, he scored. Bang, against Chelsea last night. Eden Hazard was my captain. He got me like 400 points. And it's just a par for everyone's whole lifestyle. And if you would like to join my fantasy league, I'll be posting... I might post the link a few more times, because it's already started. Actually, let me know. Contact me on my contact form on my website, awatomakealifebetter.com, and I'll send you the link, to be honest. That's probably the best way to do it, because no one's posting their links anymore for their fantasy, because it's just, you know, started last week. If you haven't got a team, don't, you know, if you're a week late, by the way, you can still start one, don't worry. Raig started his a week late last season, and he came second out of like 40 of us, so don't fret. And I've done a rundown over here of how I predict the Premier League will end. I'm very confident about the top 10 and their positions. So, in order of... I'm going to do it from number 10. 10th in the Premier League this season, 2012-13. Awate, the best rapper in the world, who's Eritrean and who's called Awate, who lives in Camden and was born in Jeddah on the 29th of May 1991. My predictions are 10th, Liverpool Football Club. That's nothing to do with tribalism or the fact that they're Liverpool or the fact that they've got a racist structure. or a structure that defends racists and puts out, you know, at least 10 people have to okay those t-shirts, by the way. The guy that printed them, the guy that asked for them, the guy that picked them up, the guy that took them to the team, Kenny Dalglish, the players, and those press releases. At least 5 guys in the legal department had to okay that press release. All those press releases, by the way, after the Luis Suarez thing. So it's nothing to do with that. It might seem like it is, but I think Liverpool struggle. I think they might do well next season, but I think it'll take a while to get used to Brendan Rodgers' style. Number 9, you've got Brendan Rodgers' old team, Swansea. I think they'll improve upon their 11th place finish last season. I think they'll invest the money that they get, it seems like they'll get from the Scott Sinclair deal very wisely. They still haven't invested that much from the Joe Allen money, so I think they'll probably improve their squad so that they have more depth. They might get themselves a centre-back or a full-back. Maybe right-back's a position for them to look at. Maybe another centre-back for either the squad, or if they're looking to split things up, get another first-team one and maybe a defensive midfielder. But if they carry on playing that sexy football, they won't need one. They'll just, you know, they have very diminutive midfielders that just pass the ball about beautifully. They're better than Barcelona because they're not as good, but they're better than Barcelona because none of them are cheats and none of them are racist, it seems. So I really enjoy watching Swansea. 8th, we have Fulham. None of this is based on the first week of the Premier League, by the way. I drew this up before it started. Fulham just won, obviously. They beat Norwich 5-0. I just think that last season I thought they should have finished higher. I thought Martin Yeo took a while to get them into the swing of things, but once they did, they were fantastic. Obviously, Dempsey might leave, but last season they had Dempsey. Brian Ruiz, who the season before they signed him was the player of the Eredivisie, played the season there in the Dutch league, who is just super technical. He's really gifted with the ball. And, you know, the chip he scored was brilliant. They've got Dembele, Moussa Dembele from Belgium, who's a brilliant player. And who else have they got? Diarra, Mohamedou Diarra, or is it Alou Diarra? I think it's Mohamedou Diarra. They've got a pretty good defence with Hughes and Hangeland and John Onorisa. And they've got some good young players like Frey, and Petrich is going to be really good for them up front. And Schwartz is a solid keeper. I think that Fulham will do well. Fulham will come 8th, in my opinion, or in my predictions. 7th is Everton. Everton are really strong. They've got, for me, a near world-class player in Marouane Fellaini. Not, you know, if we were to rate players out of 30, I would give Marouane Fellaini right now probably about a 24, 25. On his day, he destroyed United on his own, to be honest, on Monday. He pulled out a Roy Keane against Juventus performance and just properly just dug in and took the mick. And Everton have got some money now, so they've got Nika Jelovic, who was brilliant last season, and a guy that the last 44 of his goals, the last 41 of his last 44 goals were one-touch goals. So he's a poacher, and you can't really take that away from players. It's not like it was luck. He'll do well again, I think. And I think they'll put the Jack Rodwell money in. Well, they've got Pienaar back. They've got a really solid defence with Jagielka and Distant. And they've got a really good academy, Everton. So they'll keep coming out with the Ross Barkleys, and I think Seamus Coleman came from there. And obviously they've got a really good left back with Leighton Baines. Now 6th, Tottenham. Yeah, Tottenham. I think last season was Tottenham's time. I think Harry Redknapp was too stupid to get them Champions League, but obviously they came 4th and it was really harsh, and it's quite unfair in them that they didn't get a Champions League spot because Chelsea won the Champions League because they're fluky. But they should have come 2nd. They could have won the league last season, Tottenham. If they had a manager that had any tactical knowledge and it wasn't just a man motivator, Harry Redknapp really should. I don't know whether he takes the coaching, whether he takes coaching sessions, but if he does, he's awful. And if he didn't, he should have employed someone that could, and that could have a backup plan other than putting Gareth Wale on the right, which was which was more like shooting yourself in the face with a shotgun. It wasn't a backup, it wasn't a plan B, it was a plan, I'm going to shoot myself in the face with a shotgun. But Tottenham will still do all right. They've got Jan Vertonghen in, they've got Sigurdsson in, who was on loan at Swansea last season, who done brilliantly. And they've just signed Emmanuel Adebayor. They just signed him on a full-time, you know, on a permanent basis from Man City, so they should be good. Arsenal will come fifth, and I think that will make Arsenal fans and the Arsenal board and Arsene Wenger really pissed off, and I think next season they'll do really well and come second or third. I don't think Arsenal can win it because they don't have that. When they do, they'll be strong again. When they win something, they'll be strong again. But they need, firstly, they need the defeat of this season, in my opinion, them coming fifth and not making the Champions League. They need that hurt for them to come back and actually come back with some anger. And because obviously Arsenal is stereotypically lightweight. And in terms of their players, they've signed Santi Cazorla. They sold Song. They sold Ruud van Nistelrooy. They sold Robin van Persie to Manchester United, and they might get Nuri Sahin on loan. I don't think their strike force is good enough. I don't think Giroud and Podolski are gonna do well. Maybe Giroud will do well in the future. I don't think Giroud will do well this year. Not because he missed, but just because I think it will take time to adapt. Even though I think the French league is the second best league to come to England from after the German league. But Podolski, I don't think, will do well simply because he's got problems outside of Cologne all the time. Every time he leaves, or the few times that he's left Cologne, he's had problems. When he went to Bayern Munich, he scored about 4 goals, to be honest. So I don't think he'll do well there. And in terms of people like Bentner and Jovinho, Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain, they've got enough of the squad to come fifth, but I don't think they'll come fourth. Fourth is reserved for Newcastle, who will build upon their fantastic season and last season and get a Champions League spot unless Man United win the league, win the Champions League. Actually, no, we have to finish unless Arsenal win the Champions League. Oh, but they won't, obviously. Newcastle will come fourth and they'll get a Champions League spot. They're brilliant, really. They've got two strikers up front that will punch everyone in the face. They've got a midfield that will punch everyone in the face. Tiote and Kabai, brilliant midfield too. Reminiscent of Scholes and King. Not as good. But really good. They've got a really dynamic guy in Tiote and a brilliant passer of the ball. Really elegant passer of the ball in Kabai, who also puts himself about. And Ben Arfa, for me, who's the best dribbler in the league. The ball sticks to his feet so disrespectfully. So disrespectfully. And out of the class of 87 in France, which is Nasri, Benzema and Ben Arfa was always the best, the most talented. He was always a problem as a child, though, and as a teenager, and as in his early 20s. But he seems to have matured at Newcastle. And I think the fragility of the defence is their only problem, but I think they'll do well. Even last season when they lost Taylor, they still done well. Chelsea will come third. They spent a lot of money. They won't win the league. They might challenge some cups, but they won't win the league because they've got one goalkeeper and like two defenders. And moving on, City will come second because they spend a lot of money. They're not going to win the league because they've got one goalkeeper and they've got two defenders. And Yaya Toure, who's going to go on the African Nations. And Carlos Tevez can do something crazy again. Man United are going to win the league, everyone. That's basically what's happening. Manchester United are going to win the league. And it's not to do with me being a Manchester United fan. It's to do with the fact that if you look at our squad, we are very strong. Our first 11, our second 11 and our third 11... I reckon our second 11 could probably come fourth, to be honest with you. If we were to do... All right, let's do a first starting lineup for Manchester United. David De Gea, Raphael, actually... Yeah, let's put everyone in their natural positions. I'm not going to be Sir Alex Ferguson, who thinks everyone's a right-back or everyone's a winger. David De Gea, Raphael, Vidic, Ferdinand, Evra. And in midfield, Let's go for Skulls and Carrick. And in terms of attackers, I'm going to go for Van Persie. Van Persie, Rooney, Nani on the left and Valencia on the right. 4-4-2. That's the first 11. Second 11, Anders Lindegaard, Phil Jones right back, Johnny Evans and what's his name, Chris Smalling in the middle. And left back, we'll have Tyler Blackett or Boutner, who we just signed from Vitesse in the Netherlands. And in midfield, Tom Cleverley and Anderson, who got off to a brilliant start last season before both of them got injured. And right wing, we're going to play a different formation with this team. You've got Shinji Kagawa, number 10, Ashley Young, Danny Welbeck, Chicharito, and even Jesse Lingard will punch you all in the face, to be honest with you, or Nick Powell. But yeah, that second 11 will come forth. So, and then the third team, I'm not going to name it, but we've got strength in depth. We've got more defenders and more goalkeepers. The only problem Manchester United have is a problem that has been ever present since about 2009, that we don't really have a midfield. So Alex Ferguson doesn't know that midfielders exist, and we're apparently not allowed to sign them for some reason. So that's the only problem for us, really. But I think our attack is strong enough and our defence is going to be strong enough. And our goalkeeper is the best player in the league. He's the best player in the league. I said this last season to Amrik, where I said, he's going to win the Ballon d'Or. Our goalkeeper is going to... like, you know when, in back in the day when you had sick goalkeepers like, what's his name? Gordon Banks. You could say he was the best player in the world. He wasn't the best goalkeeper. He was the best player. Because, you know, a defender could be the best player in the world. It doesn't have to be a striker or an attacker. David De Gea is going to be the best player in the world in a couple of years. He's 22 and he's still better than... He's 21 and he's still better than... And he has so much potential to just be better. For 20 years he could do it. So, bloody hell. And then Anders Lindegaard. But if Man City or Chelsea's keepers go, they're finished. We've had so many injury crises. Last season we lost the league on goal difference, even though we were top of the table on the injury list table and City were bottom. We had, I think, 1,400 something days of injury, where City had something like 60. And they came 20th in terms of the most injuries, and we came first by a crap load. So then we had to bring a 38-year-old out of retirement, and we have owners that are just completely just siphoning money out of our club, 780 million or something as it stands now, and are just trying to pocket money and leave. And just, it's disgusting what's going on. But in the wider scheme of things, it's football. But football is very important to me, because I've put a lot of my emotional chips on the table, and it's helped me through a lot in my life. Times where bad things have happened and I've been in depression, football's been the thing that I've turned to and obsessed about and used as a replacement love, basically. Because there's so much of it about. You can always watch Football Match, you can always play FIFA, play Football Manager, or you can always step out of the house and kick a ball about, which I wasn't able to do when I was injured or during Ramadan. So now I'm back on it. Regent's Park, everyone, most Sundays, if you live in London, come to Regent's Park. Most Sundays we're there, me and my friends are there about 2 o'clock. Tweet me on Saturdays if you want, or on Sundays before, you know, about 11, to ask me if I'm going to be there. Some days I won't be there, but most days I will. Most Sundays I will. So join us, play some football with us. It'll be great, you know? It's been really football-based, hasn't it? Really football, packed with football stuff.
Perhaps he's wondering why someone would shoot a man before throwing him out of a plane. It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is our plan.
I watched the Dark Knight Rises for the third time 2 weeks ago with Daniel Kaluuya, my friend. He's probably my friend. Yeah, we've tweeted each other enough to be friends. He'll be on the podcast soon. He's an actor. Daniel Kaluuya was in Johnny English 2, and he was in Skins while he was in sixth form, I think, when I was, you know, we live pretty close to each other. He was in Black Mirror as well. He was in the second episode of Black Mirror, Charlie Brooker's TV show, which was brilliant. And we went to see it together. Not together, we didn't get there together or anything, but yeah, we bought tickets for the same night so we could chill out afterwards and stuff. And at the IMAX, The Dark Knight Rises is amazing. And what's nuts is the aspect ratio changes for the bits filmed in IMAX, because it's impossible to shoot dialogue with an IMAX camera without redubbing it. And I don't think Christopher Nolan likes to redub stuff. I personally hate it. I can tell in every movie that it redubs something in, because it just doesn't link up. As much as the sound or the timing links up, they don't have the same vocal afflictions as what their mouth is doing. Sounds like they should be doing. They're never shouting enough. Or maybe they're shouting too much for their actual voice. It doesn't match up. So with IMAX cameras, you can't shoot any dialogue. So nearly every shot that isn't dialogue, or I think over an hour and 10 minutes of it was shot in IMAX format. And IMAX format is something like 15 times more clearer than normal 35mm film. And it is so amazing. It's so detailed. IMAX isn't just a bigger screen and a bigger projector. It's a format and a actual IMAX cameras that you film on, which are like 10 times bigger than normal cameras, and it's so detailed and it's so breathtaking. And The Dark Knight Rises was cinematographed. The DOP, director of photography, was a guy called Wally Pfister, who's always worked with Christopher Nolan, who won't anymore because he's now going on to direct. And he's just a visual bad man, really. I mean, some of the shots he picked out, the establishing shots of, like, Gotham City, were just... I couldn't breathe. I literally couldn't breathe. Because at the IMAX, I felt like I was being hung out of a plane and looking at the establishing shots. Establishing shots are, like, when they show you the city, or before every scene in Friends will show you the house from outside. That's what an establishing shot is. But in... You know, Wally Pfister picks... They're always moving. It's like a moving landscape of the city and the skyscrapers and stuff. And I just couldn't breathe because I felt like I was being just hanged out of a helicopter, and it was me physically there. And I'm dripping, losing my mind because I'm about to, you know, I'm a couple, nearly a mile up in the air looking at the skyscrapers at the same level as me. And Hans Zimmer, Merck, the music, all I've been listening to for the last couple of weeks is Kate Bush and the soundtrack. And not just soundtrack, but also the Bane suite, because Hans Zimmer wrote and recorded some suites that he didn't actually put in the soundtrack. So I've been listening to that quite a bit. It's a great movie. It's just such an amazing movie. And I fall in love with Bane's character because he's such a revolutionary. Obviously, being a terrorist and killing people isn't good, but in the sense that the line... Oh, there's so many amazing lines that he says. But the one that proper got to me... I could sit here... I know all of his lines verbatim, by the way. I know every line that Bane said. And I walk around Camden, and I walk around my house, and I walk around my friends' houses just saying the lines to them, and they're getting so pissed off at me. I'm just going around going, peace has cost you... peace has trusted your strengths. Victory has defeated you. Or I'm just walking around just doing all that stuff. Take control. Take control of your city. This is the instrument of your liberation. But the one that proper got to me is when he says, the powerful shall be ripped from their decadent nests and cast out into the cold world that we know and endure, which is just crap. Let's just take all the rich people out of their mansions and throw them into the cold. It's just really refreshing to hear someone say something like that, to be honest, because... And even though some people are saying that he's a baddie, what Nolan's done with all the Batman movies is all the villains are parts of him, all the main ones, not really Scarecrow, but Ra's al Ghul was part of him because he taught him. the Joker was I'm not giving you any spoilers, by the way. The Joker was only there because of Batman. Joker saw that there was this place where someone was stopping, you know, stopping violence and crime, and the Joker was like, oh, this is a challenge for me. I'm going to start some chaos. And Bane literally came from the same places as Batman. No, that's not a spoiler, because everyone knows that. If you don't, it's not going to ruin your experience, to be honest. If anything, it'll make it better. that's all I'm saying. So I don't think Nolan wrote him as an evil character. I think a lot of what Bane's saying makes sense in terms of we take Gotham from the corrupt and the rich and those that lied to you and sold you this false vision of opportunity. You know, it's true. Rich people, you know, and the media and all these rich people and everyone in power do say this false idea that you too can be rich and spend all your money on Lamborghini instead of giving it to people who are dying around the world. So, brat, big up Bane. I just really loved it, man. I just want to see it so many more times. But yeah, anyway. What was I going to say? Yeah. Listen, make sure you get some Statement clothing. It's not really a sponsor, it's just a mate of mine. It's his clothing company. He's the nicest guy. It's a growing, emerging clothing company. People all over the UK are wearing it. People around the world, actually, are walking around in Statement. I wear Statement. I'm wearing a Statement t-shirt now. I wear Statement tracksuit bottoms as well, actually. And just, yeah, statement.com. Statement is spelled S-T-A-T-E-M-E-A-N-T. So, like, the word state, as in a state of being, or a state like a country, and meant, statement, meant as in you mean something, and it's a better clothing line, because instead of a stupid slogan on your t-shirt, it just has nice things to say, or image of someone that is revolutionary with one of their quotes. So get some Statement clothing, and if you got some Eid money, Eid Mubarak, by the way, buy yourself some Statement clothing with that Eid money. And even if you're not going to Eid stuff, you know, Statement clothing. Also, can everyone please post links to my videos and my mixtape and tell your friends to like my videos and watch them and to download my mixtape for free or leave a donation. If you're listening to this and you're at a computer, please do it now. My website is oratemakeyourlifebetter.com. Just send them a link and tell them to get the mixtape, because obviously I don't have a marketing budget, and I try to do everything as nicely as possible in terms of, I like to talk, I don't say fans, but people that support my music, I like to chill out with them, you know, like, you know, come play football, that kind of stuff. And I'm not one of those guys that are too proud to be, you know, offer some help. Because obviously the only way I can put my stuff out is by you people who like it going out there and telling other people about it, and me trying to do that as well. And also, if you want me to send you some stickers to your house so that you can put them around, I'll 100% not send your address to anyone or send you anything bad. Just send me your address using the contact form on my website at whytomakeyourlifebetter.com. And I'll also give you a free one of my CDs, some of my previous stuff on it. And I'll give you some stickers so you can put them around your area, in the busy parts of your whatever city you live in, or whatever town in London you live in, or I'm not gonna ship internationally because it will cost too much. But if you live in the UK, if you live in Birmingham, I'll give you some stickers. Next time you're in Birmingham City Centre, put them around in the best places. Try and put them at eye level, by the way, so that people, you know, it's easy for people to see them. Don't put them on the bus stops, but you know where it says what number buses are, like that on the big pole, put it there. Don't cover up the bus number, but try and put it there so when people look up at the bus, they see my... Anyway, they come in rows of nine, so tell me how many you want in multiples of nine. So, you know, 9, 18. Favourite times table, by the way, because you can just do it in your hand. 9, 18, 27... 36, and they all add up to 9. 9 times table, what, you know, 18, 1 plus 8 is 9. 9 times 5 is 45. and 4 + 5 = 9. It's a brilliant, it's the best times table. It's magical. 9 is the magic number. Yes, it is. It's the magic number. Jet Black do that in School of Rock. Anyway, I watched that movie quite a lot when I was, you know, when it came out. I think on VHS. Help me out, do that kind of stuff. And the other thing I was going to say is, my friends, Fear of a Brown Planet from Australia, are coming to London and the United Kingdom. They're going to be in London and Bradford and Manchester and Birmingham, and I think they're going to Cardiff as well. So go to, just Google Fear of a Brown Planet and look at their tour dates, and on their Facebook and on their Twitter page, they have the links to all the venues they're going to play in London. Listen, they're coming to London. They're from Australia, innit? And they're two brown guys. They're amazing comics. Go on YouTube and watch their stuff, and then you're going to think, I need to see them in London, or I need to see them in the United Kingdom, in my closest city. If you're in Leeds, go to the Bradford gig. Get your tickets now, because they're the funniest guys. They're just the funniest guys, and I might go and tour with them as well, to be honest, and just so I can chill out with them, and I might rap outside the venue, if that's a deal breaker for you. I might do a little rap outside the venue for pennies if you want to throw them at me, and we can have a chat or whatever. But seriously, go on, get your tickets. Not just you, by the way. Tell all of your friends. Set up a Facebook event. If you live in Manchester, set up a Facebook event. Invite all of your friends that you want to come with you, and just buy the tickets and go together as a group. A lot of people have done it in Birmingham. Paul is going with quite a few people. Man, them in Bradford are taking people. Just get all your mates. They're two Muslims. They're not just talking about Muslim stuff. They're talking about a lot of. Check out their YouTube stuff, on their stuff on YouTube, and then it will show you what kind of people they are and how funny they are and all the subjects they talk about. Right? They're amazing, but they are family friendly as well. So you can bring, don't bring babies, because that would just be annoying. Just cry all day. I'm being disrespectful to your baby, but you can bring a baby to a comedy gig. But yeah, you can bring. I reckon you can bring. Kids from the age of about 12, maybe 14, to the gig. So bring your children as well, and support my stuff by posting it everywhere, all over the internet. Maybe do it once a week. Just say, this is Owate stuff, get it, it's fantastic. If you think it's fantastic, if not, just tell them to get it and you think it's terrible, but at least tell them to get it, alright? Give everyone an equal opportunity to listen to my stuff. So, I think, I don't know how long this has been. But next time, hopefully in 2 weeks, I'll have a guest. Someone that is super famous. Seriously, I'm going for A-listers. I don't know if I thought that was going to be funny. That didn't even work. I don't know. Seriously, I'm going for A-listers. Hey! Oh, that was terrible. Even me trying to recover from it was terrible. I'm just going to go now. Thank you very much for listening to this song at the end. What kind of song at the end shall I play? Oh, this is bad. I'm not putting any songs at the end. You've got a mixtape. Listen to my mixtape after this. Peace. Later on.